I am joined by my good friend Rob Bowman from Hockey Abstract, hockeyabstract.com, and of course the book Stat Shot. And here we are a day into the postseason, and we have just a buffet of topics. I want to get into some of the numbers in some of the series. I want to get into some of the individual matchups, but I'd be remiss if we didn't start with what has been a very crazy week. Started off with a bunch of firings in terms of coachings and one general manager on Monday, and now we're into the hiring phase. I don't know where you want to pick it up. I suppose Ken Hitchcock is maybe as good a place as any because, I mean, Randy Carlyle went back, but Ken Hitchcock? Hitchcock 15 years later, back in Dallas. Is this a good move?
You know, it's funny, when I was doing some statistical analysis earlier in the year about coaching, you know, possible coaches for the Vegas Golden Knights, possible coaches for Florida, who had an early firing of Gallant and all that, I included Hitchcock in my analysis. And my editors told me, no, you can't include Hitchcock. And I'm like, well, why not? It's the last year. It was his last year in St. Louis. They already announced that Yao was going to replace him even before he was fired. They announced
that.
So let's include Hitchcock. He's available for the Vegas Golden Knights. And they said, no, he's going to retire. No one's going to hire him. He's going to be done. So I didn't include him in the analysis. But if I had, he would have been number one in terms of experience, in terms of prior success. Hitchcock is the best coach right now in the sport. There are others that are as good, but there's no one better. And so,
Okay, I'll stop you there, because my gut would go Quinville, Joel Quinville. There's three Stanley Cups to one Stanley Cup. What is ultimately the big determination of, you know, who's better, right?
Well, as you know, there's a number of metrics I look at. You know, when you start comparing Quinville to Hitchcock, I mean, and you come up with one better than the other, you're probably splitting hairs.
Okay.
You're probably not really coming out and feeling very confident about it. But when you say something like, I don't know, that Hitchcock is better than Jack Capuano, well, you're not splitting hairs. I mean, that's something you can defend.
Yes.
But when you're arguing Quenville to Hitchcock, I mean, you're splitting hairs.
Okay, fair enough. But Dallas a fit for him?
Well, I think Dallas, you know, they're kind of in that middle zone. They're not a team that I think is ready to compete for the Stanley Cup. At the same time, they're not a rebuilding team. If it weren't for that atrocious blue line that they decided to start the season with, I think they would have been in the mix for a wild card. They would have been a playoff team. And so if they address that in the offseason, then, yeah, I think they can apply a good coach. But if you're not ready to compete, you're right. There's no point having Hitchcock. But if they fix that blue line, I think they're ready to compete.
Okay, so you mentioned Vegas and the team, you know, the people you were looking for. It is Gerard Gallant. He's been named the head coach. What about that fit?
Well, at the time I did that analysis, for ESPN, I think it was, out of them, or yeah, it was ESPN. Gallant wasn't available yet when I did that analysis, right? But I figure Gallant is very similar in terms of experience and results as coaches we are familiar with, like Bob Hartley, for instance, or Ron Wilson or something like that. I think Gallant, however, is sort of an upgraded version. I think there's not a lot of available coaches who have had more success in the QMJHL, and of course in his brief NHL career as Gallant. So I think that's a perfectly solid defensible choice. They also had the choice to go a different direction and get a more developmental coach, or to stretch a new coach from another league into the NHL. And I pitched a few names in that article.
Right.
But I think Gallant's a solid coach to go with. He had a lot of success in the Q.
What do you do in Vancouver? That's one we're not really talking a lot about. LA's out there, Florida's out there. But Vancouver is a very interesting role or job for me because of what are they? Are they rebuilding? Are they hanging on? What are you doing there?
I don't think Desjardins was to blame. I think anyone can look at that roster. I don't think anyone saw that as a playoff team when the year began.
No.
I don't think anyone understood why they would pick up a long-term free agent like Louis Erickson on a team that should be rebuilding.
Right.
Especially because you know the Sedins are, you never know how much they have left. They're amazing athletes, but you don't know. They should be rebuilding. So you can't blame Desjardins. That roster was not competitive. Desjardins was very successful. I think it was in the WHL that he was working in the NHL.
Absolutely.
Very, very successful coach. Very promising coach. He'll land on his feet somewhere else. But that's who they should be looking for. They need a coach that can help them rebuild. They need a rebuilding coach. And that's who they should be looking for.
Daryl Sutter out in L.A., again, back to that conversation about a veteran coach like a Ken Hitchcock, he obviously would jump to the top of a lot of lists, wouldn't he?
I think Sutter needs to go to a team that's ready to compete. So I don't think that's going to be Vancouver. I think it's got to be a different team that's ready to compete now.
Florida?
Florida's closer to the conversation. The Islanders are closer to the conversation. Although did they officially
Doug, Doug Waite's officially
okay,
their coach.
So that's out. So teams that are, I think, ready to compete right now, I think it's a better place. I mean, when Daryl Sutter went to the Kings, they were a playoff bubble team.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
I think Terry Murray was who he replaced.
Yep.
So he came in. I think that's a really good place for him to go. Not a rebuilding team. I think he's there to help a bubble team take the step into contention.
He's Rob Volman from HockeyAbstract.com, also writing for NHL.com this week. Five stats on each series. I don't want to give away the endings because we want people to go find them and read them, but let me pick a couple of the series. Give me a couple of interesting stats from that San Jose-Edmonton series. Everybody's talking about it the day after, an overtime game. You know, Edmonton, great start. San Jose, great finish. But give me a couple of fun numbers out of that.
Sure, and of course, as you know, you can get all these articles on NHL.com, and I'm really thrilled to be part of their playoff coverage, very privileged to be part of the playoff coverage again this year. It's always a lot of fun working with them. So a lot of the focus in the San Jose-Edmonton series is on the McDavid matchup. McDavid's going to get shadowed by Marc-Edouard Vlasic, obviously, during the series. Now, the interesting thing about McDavid, with 100 points on a team that scored 243 goals, that means he was in on 41%, over 41% of the team scoring, which is obscene in today's day and age.
Yep.
Either personally scored or assisted on over 40% of the team scoring. That's insane. So Vlasic shuts down McDavid. He has shut down the Oilers. Another interesting stat there is that you look very much, this is a contest between age, or I should say experience,
yep,
versus youth.
Yep.
You take a look at San Jose, virtually all of their scoring, all their numbers, players in their 30s, their top four, all are in their 30s. I think it was seven of their top eight scorers in their 30s, everyone except Couture. And then you look over at Edmonton, it's the opposite story. Everybody's young. All the scoring has come from players in the 20s, not just McDavid, but that entire roster, very, very young. So you're getting a little bit of that experience versus youth. And I looked at some numbers specifically in the article about that.
What about another series last night that went into overtime and was, you know, crazy, but I came away more impressed with Minnesota, even though they lost that game. I mean, Jake Allen was out of his mind. But what are you seeing in that series, Rob?
Well, there's another interesting individual player matchup in that series. I mean, you talk about McDavid versus Vlasic. What about Tarasenko versus Ryan Suter?
Right.
Now, Ryan Suter, we all know him. He's a workhorse. He rates third in NHL in minutes played over the past few years combined. He led the league with a plus 34. I know that's a bit of a bogus stat, but I think it represents just how well Minnesota has done on the ice with Suter.
Yep.
And if he shuts down Tarasenko, again, this is a case, I think, where you shut down the one player, you've shut down the team. Because Tarasenko, I think he scored 39 goals. That's almost twice as many as anyone on the team except Patrick Berglund, who scored 23. So really, all the goals coming from Tarasenko, all the shots coming from Tarasenko. So that's really the key matchup. I looked at some numbers specifically about Suter versus Tarasenko.
One more from last night, and that is the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Very close in the standings, but completely different playoff pedigrees. What do you see in that series?
Well, again, I'll start with the matchup everyone wants to talk about, Crosby versus Dubinsky. Of course, they have a lot of history together. And Dubinsky is at his most vicious. I looked at the number of hits, the number of penalties, the number of infractions. I mean, he really is at his nastiest right now, his full form. The problem here, though, is if you shut down Crosby, you haven't shut down the Penguins. Crosby's out there usually with someone like Brian Rust or Connor Sheary so that Malkin and Kessel, you know, so Dubinsky's paying attention to Crosby, well, then Kessel and Malkin are going to open you up. So,
and which is what happened last night. Kessel, a goal and an assist, right?
Right. So that's one of the reasons why the Penguins are difficult to compete against is because, you know, you shut down Crosby and those other guys are going to light you up. So here are two great offensive teams. I mean, Columbus has got a lot of offensive talent in their own right. So here are two tough offensive teams going to be slugging it out. But don't just watch Crosby because really the difference could be the ice that opens up for Kessel and Malkin.
Let's talk about a couple of the series that are going on. As we've been speaking, the Washington Capitals have tied their game with the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-2 late in period number two. What about this series? I mean, this is David and Goliath, at least in the standings. You know, the President's Trophy winning team in Washington and this young Toronto team. What are you seeing in that?
Well, it's really quite unfortunate for Toronto that they pulled this first round matchup. Now, in the past, people have called Washington, and I've always said no, but this year I actually am calling Washington.
You are,
as a Stanley Cup favorite. Okay. This is a really tough first-round matchup, and it's not because of Washington's vaunted offense. We all know about their offense. We know all about their scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason Washington has such a big edge in this series is their defense, not their offense, their defense. In fact, Toronto can probably skate goal for goal with Washington offensively, in my view.
Yep.
They do it differently. Washington, they do it with shooting percentages. Toronto does it with shot volumes. But defensively, there's really no match here. Washington is one of the best defenses in the league. Toronto was not.
Every once in a while, I just want to stop you because I think there's a great little nugget for those who might be new to analytics. Can you just differentiate between shot volume and shooting percentage when somebody hears that?
Yeah, well, goals is a combination of either taking the shots and, of course, scoring on a high percentage of the shots.
Right.
shooting percentage is the inverse of a goalie save percentage. So some teams, they score a lot of goals by getting a high shooting percentage. Mm-hmm. Now, that could either be because the shooters are really good.
Yep.
It could be because they're getting into position. Could be because they're setting up screens or getting on the power play a lot or crossing the ice, or could be luck.
Mm-hmm.
The other way of doing it, of course, is just shot volumes.
Right.
And that's what Toronto does. If you watch them play, they put the puck on the net like crazy.
Yeah,
they just throw the puck on the net like crazy. Other teams have been very successful with that strategy. The Kings, most famously under Sutter, adopted that same strategy and rode it to the Cup. So it's a good strategy, right? But the Washington Capitals, they do it with high shooting percentages.
So in terms of tactic then, because I think you would look at both teams and say they both have skill.
Right.
You know, you brought in the LA Kings.
Offensively, yes.
Right. The LA Kings didn't necessarily have that skill, so they put a lot of pucks in high danger areas.
Right.
Obviously, the tactic then for using, shooting percentage is you want to game the zone and you want to get the best opportunity to get the shot, whereas Toronto's just putting the pucks, again, that funnel area, that home plate area, they're just putting them into dangerous areas, right?
Yeah, and the best example of that is actually going to be the Boston series against Ottawa.
Oh, okay.
Because both Boston and Ottawa are built like that.
Put
the puck on the net and then crash the net.
Okay.
Neither team, with the exception, of course, of Carlson, neither team is really known for finesse shots and getting, Steven Stamkos highlight goals. It's all about getting into the zone, getting the puck on the net. So Boston-Ottawa is an excellent example of high shot volumes.
Glad I asked the question. That was terrific. Rob Volman from HockeyAbstract.com and the author of StatShot, our guest here. Our extended coverage taking you right up to Flames warm-up at the bottom of the hour. Rob, the Chicago-Nashville series, going into that, it's funny, we were talking, you had a great run last year. You missed on one series, so you were able to correctly predict the outcome. This year is not that easy, is it? At least on the outset, it doesn't appear to be that easy, and this series might best exemplify that.
Yeah, that's right. Last year, I was 14-1, and I love to point that out because I'm not going to have that chance anymore, because this year I'm going to get clobbered. I had a really, really hard time making my picks. The numbers really didn't point one way or the other, and even my own instincts didn't really point one way or the other on very many of these mm-hmm. matchups. And you're right, Chicago-Nashville, in my view, it's a toss-up. In the end, I went with Chicago just because if you pick Chicago, you get it wrong, no one's going to blame you, right? It really is a coin toss, these two teams.
And there's a considerable separation point-wise if you were just looking at that.
Right,
if you're
just looking at points.
Points.
Yeah.
Why this year? Why is it so different? I said to you off the air, and I look at that Ottawa-Boston series, I don't know. Even last night, my God, Boston didn't have a shot in the second period. They still managed to win a hockey game. It just seems like it's really tight this year.
In that series, I was a little bit more comfortable going for Boston because I mentioned their shot-based metrics are extremely good. They're reminiscent of the Kings when they surprised everyone that first year that they went on that run.
Yep.
Now, of course, I'm not happy that they parted ways with Claude Julien because coaching, as I've said to you many times, is a huge factor in the playoffs. And that's why I think losing Julien was a mistake, and it's to Montreal's advantage. But at the same time, Boston also has Tuukka Rask, who could catch fire.
Yep.
He's caught fire before. We know what he's capable of. He was average in the regular season, but we know what he can do. So I was a bit more confident picking Boston than I was picking a winner in the Chicago-Nashville series.
Talk about the Anaheim-Calgary series. I mean, Pat brought up a good point earlier today. You might have heard me ask Eric Francis this. You look at a lot of the numbers, at least the counting numbers and things like that. There's not a lot of boxes you check in Calgary's favor over Anaheim. How do you see this series?
Well, there's one box I would pick for Calgary. In general, you're right. I mean, this is going to be a very, very physical series.
Yeah.
And Anaheim can afford to be physical because they throw a lot more hits per penalty, right?
Yep.
And their penalty kill is one of the best with Ryan Kessler, right? However, there is one area I discovered, and I put this on NHL.com. Calgary is one of the best teams in the league this year, one of the very best teams in the league at protecting leads. Whether it was the second period lead or a third period lead, they had one of the best records when carrying that lead into there. And in contrast, Anaheim was one of the worst at catching a team when they were trailing.
Oh, wow.
So one of the key things to watch in this series is if Calgary can get that early lead, which I admit is hard to do.
Yep.
It didn't happen very much to Anaheim. Anaheim usually played very well in the first. But if Calgary can catch that early lead, bang, that's an area where Calgary's playing to its strength and could surprise the Ducks.
How much of that is based on timing of the game? And the reason I ask that is that I know that the Flames number after 40 minutes of play was obscene. But, where do you put more emphasis? Because they did play Anaheim. They had a 1-0 lead. Then they gave up two goals in the second period and ended up losing that game 3-1. Where does that come into play? Is that a later in the game thing? Or is that any time? I mean, if they score a minute into the game, are they more likely to win?
Well, statistically, for the Flames, they had one of the league's best record, whether they were carrying that lead into the second or into the third.
Oh, okay.
And Anaheim was bad when they were chasing lead, whether it was the second or the third. Of course, Anaheim wasn't trailing very often this season. They have a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, looking at Calgary's team, we all know the top of their lineup is a lot better than the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that their top three defensemen are some of the best in the league, Giordano, Hamilton, Brody, whereas their bottom three is a little bit, you know, more run-of-the-mill, to put it kindly.
Yep.
So early in the game, when all the defensemen are out there and all the forward lines are out there, Anaheim, I think, does have them outmatched. Right, but in the third period, when the benches are shortened, and Anaheim's trying to just chip away at those elite top few lines the Calgary has, that's where the Ducks are in trouble.
I want to ask you about some of the other things. Those are your from your NHL.com stories, but you've also been active on Twitter with some really interesting lists. And there are some Flames and Ducks that show up on some of these. Why don't you just share a couple with us and encourage everybody to check you out on Twitter, because I thought that was kind of really interesting, some of the numbers.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of the year-end number crunching. It's like Christmas.
Sure.
As I'm watching the playoffs, I'm crunching the numbers on the side. And I tweeted out some interesting things. I discover them. And one thing I discovered, for instance, is I looked at the best minor penalty differential. That is to say, the number of penalties that you draw minus the number of penalties that you've taken. And Gaudreau ranked number second in the league with plus 29. So basically, that's 29 extra power plays you had because Gaudreau was in the lineup. But number one, Connor McDavid, plus 39. And as far as the Ducks go, an interesting one here is I took a look at the most rebounds. Now, rebounds, this is a stat that was actually invented by Allan Ryder in 2004. It's basically a shot that occurs within a few seconds of a shot in the same zone with no intervening event.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, Ryan Kessler led the league. He took 41 rebound shots. Monahan was tied for fifth with 28.
So can I just clarify that? So is that they got a shot off of a rebound or a shot that created a rebound?
No, he took the rebound. Kessler was taking the rebound.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a matter of crashing the net.
Being where you want him to be.
There,
being
in the mix.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of these numbers, when you look at them, I mean, Kessler measures very well in a lot of these sort of fancy stats, these off-the-wall stats. And, for instance, another interesting one is most tip-in or deflection goals.
Mm-hmm.
You actually get this right on NHL.com. The most goals scored by tip-in or deflection. Now, the leader was Chris Kreider of the New York Rangers, no surprise, with 10.
Yep.
Ryan Kessler was tied for fourth with 7.
Right.
So Kessler gets a lot of his goals right there in front of the net, making things happen, getting rebounds, getting tip-ins, getting deflections, and as does Monahan the other direction.
Yeah.
So that's another key thing to watch during the series.
Now, is that a power play specific thing, or is that just in all situations?
This is all situations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know he's, you know, obviously a very good addition for them on the power play, right? And that's not all the time, but I would assume that a lot of the tip-in goals would come on power play.
Yeah, right? And also, not just the power play. I mean, if you look at Anaheim's penalty kill before they signed Kessler 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, now you think of Anaheim, you're thinking, well, that's one of the best penalty kills in the league. But before they got him, it was pretty run-of-the-mill. And it's not just him. Now he's got this great shutdown line with the Iron Man, Andrew Cogliano.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jacob Silverberg, who might get grabbed by the Golden Knights in the expansion draft. I don't want to get ahead of you there.
No.
That's a great shutdown on. And if you remember when the Ducks won their last cup, they had that so-called nothing line of Rob Niedermeyer, Sammy Paulson, and
Travis Moen. Yeah.
Right? I know I'm going way back on you on that. But
you know what that did, Rob? That just instilled in me, moving forward, the importance of third lines.
Right.
And as we went on year after year, even last year, Phil Kessel was playing on the third line. That's depth. That's what you win championships with. And I think that 07 team, that line in particular, really hammered that home because of their importance.
Yeah, that nothing line. And, you know, that's another key thing to look at as you're watching these games is sometimes the first and second lines kind of cancel each other out. Who has that elite third line like we saw from the Penguins last year or the famous nothing line from years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, that might be something that Calgary needs to develop for next year.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree. Well, and I can't help but wonder if that's not what Sam Bennett might turn into, which people go, oh, wait a minute. No, he was supposed to be a top six, four. There's only so many top six spots. But if you can create a really good third line or a 1-1A, 1-B, whatever you want to call it, that you go a long way, a lot long. He is Rob Volman from HockeyAbstract.com. I'll come back. I want some final thoughts on the playoffs. Before we do that, just like shooting percentage and shot volume, a little explanation for those listening about how you should use analytics in the postseason. Because, of course, the numbers are now just reset and we're starting all over again, and it might be really exciting to look at somebody after one game. and how much do you trust what they did in the regular season versus the postseason? Do you have some rules of thumb?
Sure. In fact, I wrote an article a couple years ago about all the things that change in the playoffs, scoring's up here or the penalties are down there or something like that. And so there are a few changes in the playoffs. And I think one of the big changes, though, is that the talent is a little bit more evenly distributed. Like, you're not going to have a big mismatch in terms of goaltending mm-hmm. or shooting. Mm-hmm. And so that just makes it a lot more difficult to score goals. And so that's actually why scoring goes down in the playoffs, by the way. And it goes down progressively as the playoffs advance. It's because you're not going to have mismatches against weak goaltending or weak defenses, because there aren't any in the playoffs. And the ones that exist are usually quickly eliminated. But you don't want to rush to any conclusions. And one of the first things we say in the world of the salary cap and all that is nothing leads to a bad contract more than playoff success. A player will have a really hot playoff time, and then a team will get too excited and sign him to a very long, huge contract. If you actually go back and you take a look at all the bad contracts of the past decade of the salary cap era, and then you look at the previous year, you'll see that that person probably had a really good playoff run the year before signing that big deal. So that's not exactly what you're asking, but...
No, but I think it's a good... Like Brian Bickle, you know...
Sure, good example.
Falls into that. And some might say Troy Brouwer here in Calgary, right?
Yeah.
He had a really good run with St. Louis. You look at that and you go, that's exactly what the Flames needed. But can he do it during the regular season, which he wasn't able to do? And here we are now wondering what he's going to bring you in the postseason, right?
Yeah, every game matters, whether it's the playoffs, whether it's the regular season. These games matter, but they don't matter more. You know, put confidence in the 82 games as well as the games you see in the playoffs. So if someone has a good 20 games in the playoffs, that's great. But don't weigh those 20 games more than the 82 that preceded them. I mean, use all that information together and don't put too much into one or the other.
Okay, once again, what do you got at NHL.com right now?
Angela, I got those five interesting stats for all eight series. Very interesting insights and perspectives on each that you're not necessarily going to get in the traditional analysis.
Okay, NHL or ESPN?
ESPN, I've got all the key individual matchups, one per series, like Tarasenko Suter, one per series.
Okay. And at HockeyAbstract.com, what's going on?
At HockeyAbstract.com, I'll be rolling out the annual super spreadsheets. That's going to include the goalie super spreadsheet. It's going to include individual players. It's going to include women's hockey, I mentioned. It's going to include the updated translation factors, quality starts. Everything that you've come to know and love through my books is all going to get updated over the next few weeks on HockeyAbstract.com.
And I would also give a little bit of love to the player usage chart, which I think is terrific when you get to this time of the year because of the sorting that you can do with it. And it really will give somebody a little... You want a little more insight on this matchup that you're watching or your favorite team. This is a good place to go.
It's a great place to get insight into how the opposition uses their lineups. And a good example is the Chicago-Nashville, because both coaches have very specific ways that they deploy their lines.
Yeah, as does Randy Carlyle.
Yes.
The Anaheim Ducks,
that's
right?
True. Yep.
Run them down. Who do you got in the first round?
Well, let me see. In the East, Washington. I got Washington over Toronto.
Yep.
I felt pretty good about that one.
Yep.
I got Pittsburgh over Columbus. It's more of a coin toss, but I took Pittsburgh there. And as I mentioned, I took Boston over Ottawa and felt good about it.
Yep.
I took Montreal over the Rangers and felt okay. In the West, I took, I did take Chicago over Nashville, but I said that was a coin toss. St. Louis and Minnesota had a heck of a time.
You
because St. Louis is super hot, but Minnesota's the better team. So I went with the better team.
Yep.
Instead of a hot hand, I went with the better team. I went with Minnesota there. I'm sorry to say that I did take Anaheim over Calgary, but that's not a one-sided. Calgary could very easily has the components to be one, but I took Anaheim. And then finally, I did take San Jose over Edmonton.
You did it.
I took the experience over the youth. And we'll, you know, but that again is a close series because McDavid, quite frankly, is one of those things you can't draw a circle around with numbers. I mean, that player just does what he wants to do, and there's nothing that a stat sheet's going to do about it.
He's a force of nature.
He is.
Thank you, Rob Woolman, Hockey Abstract, HockeyAbstract.com, and of course, the book is Stat Shot.